Life Takes Guts with Nidhi Swaroop. Hi, and welcome to the podcast series from the Crohn's and Colitis Society of Singapore. We will be bringing practical information to patients diagnosed with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. Family members and friends will also gain a better understanding of our life after diagnosis. We believe that our conversations will bring hope and empowerment to you as we journey together. Alex had always been active and involved in sports. On the other hand, he had been living with a weak stomach. Then, at the age of 40, he had to face additional symptoms. What was the impact of a diagnosis of inflammatory bowel disease on his parents? Is it easy or a challenge to identifying trigger foods? Lots of other issues are discussed in today's episode.
Hi, this episode of Life Takes Guts with Nidhi Swaroop. I welcome Alex today. Hi, Alex.
Hey, hi, Nidhi.
I'm wondering if you could share a few details to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Okay. I'm Alex. I'm reaching 40. And I used to be active with sports, different kind of sports and all, until the recent years where, something hit.
Okay. I believe that last 2 to 3 years have been extremely challenging for you. And something very significant has happened recently. Could you share some details about it?
Yeah, so I think in around April 2017, shortly after my wedding, actually, I went for my hemorrhoid surgery because I had piles since some time back. And then I thought it should take me probably about a few weeks to recover, but thereafter it just seemed to get worse in terms of like increased bowel movement and all. So that's where I went for a second check. Yeah, that's where I was formally diagnosed with ulcerative colitis.
So this consultation would have been with a gastroenterologist in a hospital setting. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And all these like symptoms to diagnosis, what was the time duration?
Oh, it was very short for me. So that's the thing. Everything happened very quickly because right before the hemorrhoid surgery, there was a scope being done. That was in April. And then I thought that they didn't manage to see anything during the first scope. And then thereafter, it was surgery, then the recovery. And then with that, it was from I did a stool test that the calprotectin level was really high. I think it was at 800 plus?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
that's high.
Yeah, so that was where they suspect that something else is happening in the body. So they did another scope and they actually found ulcerations along the colon, yeah.
So when you mentioned surgery, that was to do with the piles issue, is it?
Yes.
Okay. And that has been around for approximately how long?
Probably with me for about close to 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
For 20 years.
Yeah.
And all along, you have not had any indication of even a doctor suspecting that you might have anything more than piles, nothing else, yeah?
No, so I think since young, I always sort of, I've been told by my parents that I have a sensitive stomach. Yeah, so I think what they nowadays term it as a nervous stomach. So whenever I take exams and all, my parents will always say like, go to the toilet right before,
okay.
Make sure that you clear everything.
Yeah. So yeah. Is it kind of like irritable bowel syndrome, IBS?
Honestly, I'm not very sure because my understanding of IBS is that it's allergy to certain things. And most likely we are talking about food also, but it can be stress-induced as well. So I'm not sure if this is classified under IBS, actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that has been around in your case since childhood. And then there was the issue in the last about 10 years or so, which has to be very specifically to do with piles.
Yes.
Then the surgery. But then around the surgery, you said a lot of things happen. And then came the colonoscopy and the fecal calprotectin test, everything showing something major, meaning then they went to investigate further and then ulcerative colitis was diagnosed, yeah?
Yes.
So when so many things are happening all together, yeah, so many changes, you know, you were also getting married and then there's this surgery and then there's a new diagnosis. Could you share some of your feelings at that time?
I think it is a bit traumatizing, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I think it's more confusing. At the initial phase, it's more confusing than traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that after surgery, it takes time for you to get well and all. There's a lot of discomfort and all. So you will regard that discomfort as a form of recovery.
Mm.
Yeah. And then after that, you keep seeing symptomatically that it's the bowel movement is increasing, the urgency is not helping. And you just get very confused because you have no idea what's happening. You thought that it's supposed to be better. So you thought that it's something to do with the recovery stage.
Mm.
Something is not right. Mm. Then okay. When you are diagnosed, then it's another confusion because it's something that you have never heard of.
Yeah. So it's like ulcerative colitis. Okay, what is that? Right?
Yeah.
Something like that. And you would have probably asked a few questions and things like, okay, how common is it? Or, you know, what does it mean having ulcerative colitis? Yeah. So what was the initial information that was shared with you?
I think my doctor has been rather honest, mm-hmm. as in like given the facts. They are just stating facts like it is not something that is treatable. That means you won't get a cure for it.
Mm.
It's going to be chronic. However, it can be controlled with medication.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it can be managed, yeah? So,
yes.
But in your family, like, did you go and ask around if anybody had heard of ulcerative colitis or inflammatory bowel disease? Did anyone have that?
Not that I know of. And even when I was diagnosed, when everyone, the extended family were asking and all, nobody have any idea what it is. But definitely, I see a trend of like some of the family members having a weaker stomach than others. But I think this is common among the general population. So it's very difficult to conclude anything.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So I would suppose then it was up to you to share what the diagnosis means. And when you shared like, okay, it's a chronic condition, there is no cure, and I will be on medication for the rest of my life, most likely, that's what I understand. So what was the family's reaction to this diagnosis?
I think even until now, even until today, I think because my parents are not very well educated, and especially for my father, he's like really not educated and he's Chinese speaking and all. So he don't understand, he don't really believe in, he's not a strong believer in Western medicine. So at the same time, it's very difficult for him to comprehend something that he has no idea about.
Yes.
And then he see all these symptoms that I've been going through. I think it's actually more, honestly speaking, I think it's more traumatizing for the family members to be seeing it as a parent, even when I'm reaching 40, my age.
I would imagine.
It's more traumatizing for them than me, actually.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, maybe more information should be shared with them so that they understand. Maybe someone who can speak the language, the dialect, or, you know, be it Mandarin or any other dialect.
Yes.
And then he might be more comfortable to, meaning, you know, like when we don't understand, it makes it more scary.
Yes.
Yeah? Whereas once, at least for him to be able to understand that, okay, it's not like a terminal illness or really a threatening kind of illness that keeps spreading all over the body kind of thing. You know, all those doubts might be in his mind, but he might be hesitant to ask, you know, that there is my son and I don't understand what's going on. So he might actually try to shut it out, or not want to talk about it or something, So, how about your mother?
She's slightly more understanding, but at the same time, I think they still... I think for my mom, she kind of understands how it feels going through a chronic condition, and especially when you are actively experiencing the flare now. So she don't ask much, but I do try as much as possible to communicate to them that, you know, especially the part that it is, at this point in time, everything is non-fatal. So it's not like life and death, but at the same time, it is, that's the problem with things. When it's not life and death, other people don't get it.
Yes.
Don't get the seriousness of
it. So it's challenging for us as patients also, because on the one hand, we are trying to tell them, don't worry too much. But on the other hand, we're saying like, okay, it's not a very mild thing, so take me seriously.
The balance is difficult.
it's a bit difficult for them also. Where do they place me? So sometimes we joke at home that they should be like a barometer or something on our mind, on our forehead, you know, how ill am I feeling today? Am I feeling blah, blah, or am I very fatigued today? But there is no indicator, right? And and most of the time we look okay. When people see us, it's not like we are using a walking stick or we are in a wheelchair. We are able to walk around as per normal. So it's a bit difficult on them,
I think it's really tough because when you are at your worst, you can't even be out. So people don't see that side of you.
But
when you're just slightly better, you're trying to adapt to back to normal life. and it appears to be normal, but actually you are still suffering some sort of symptoms.
Yes.
It's a lot of gradual adaptation rather than like it's not a leap and pop, suddenly you're okay kind of thing.
Like what I feel sometimes is I need to gather all my energy to take that one trip out. And then I'm choosing to smile, but that doesn't mean I'm healthy today. You know, I've recovered totally. It's a choice. It's a conscious choice because we don't want the other person to look at us with pity or feel sorry for me. Just understand what I'm going through. So, then I'm just wondering that because at the same time you had just gotten married. So how did your spouse, you know, how did your wife take this?
it was difficult. Honestly, I think she has been rather understanding, but yet as patients ourselves, we understand very clearly that nobody can share that burden. Nobody can understand exactly what we are going through. I mean, not to say that if you are well, someone can actually understand what you're going through, but especially when you're sick. So there are quite a fair bit of challenges in terms of, especially when you just got married and you don't get to go out. We can't travel. We delayed our honeymoon until I was slightly better, yet the whole honeymoon had to be planned according to like accessibility to toilets. And it cannot be like some hiking trip or something.
I suppose you can't even be spontaneous that just go away for something, you know, on the spur of the moment you decide to do something. It's a bit difficult with us when we're living with either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. So, that's a lot of adjustment.
It was a really challenging, like we actually went to Italy for our supposed honeymoon. And it's all about wine and cheese and stuff. And you were like, okay, everything you have to control. And the pasta and all is like, okay, I'm taking so much today already. Yes. I better not. If not tomorrow, I'm going to miss, like, maybe if I'm there, I have some trips somewhere, you know, where you have to be in the bus right. for long hours and all. Oh my God. Like,
Yeah. So that kind of a worry is at the back of your mind.
Constantly, yes.
Yeah. And I would imagine the flight would have been like, I don't know, is it 20 hours or something from Singapore to...
Yeah, luckily we did a transit.
Yeah, you stopped on the way to manage. Mm. Yeah, because a very long journey is also taxing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any challenge when it comes to the flight takeoff and landing when you can't have access to the toilet? Was that an issue?
Luckily not, because at a point in time, I was in, I won't say remission, but I was better at a point in time, yeah.
Okay. So you were able to manage and you can be seated with the seatbelt on, yeah? That is...
yes.
Because if we are having numerous trips to the toilet, like when the number of diarrhea in a day is high, it can be quite challenging and nobody would understand why we need to get up, right? So in your case, it was quite okay at that time during the trip.
Consider myself lucky, yes.
Lucky. Yeah. And it was not the pandemic yet. So you were actually able to get your...
It was in 1-8, yes.
1-8.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So ever since, what kind of dietary changes have you made because of your diagnosis of ulcerative colitis?
I think at a very initial stage, I tried to be stricter and I tried different types of diet. I tried different kinds of medication, different kinds of therapies. So in terms of diet-wise, I think I was stricter in terms of like non-dairy, I even tried non-gluten. Mm-hmm. I even tried SCD for a while. It was honestly very challenging. Yeah. And,
what do you mean by challenging?
Actually, in terms of like the meal preps, and back then I was still working when I started that stage where I was trying out different food. I was still working. So I think the environment in Singapore in terms of food and all, if you don't prepare your meals, it's very difficult. And honestly, I don't know about different cultures, but generally, the younger population, and as Chinese myself, I mean, I don't have the habit of meal prepping.
Yes,
of prepping every day, like especially when you are working long hours.
Correct.
Like you just want to get over and done with.
In Singapore, it's so much more convenient than any other country.
Oh, yes,
where you
yes.
have well prepared meals at a very reasonable price.
Yeah,
right next to your workplace, right next to your workplace, or even in the university or colleges, wherever people are, you know, so it's like part of our work life and the culture of Singapore.
Yes.
Yeah. So just about everyone has, and there's so many people who actually never cook at home. Young couples, right? You have your breakfast and leave, and then your lunch and dinner are all outside. So, totally understand. So you were working at that time and you tried different diets. Were these guided by a dietitian or a doctor, or how did you do that?
It's mostly based on own research, honestly. I even tried to keep a food diary. So by tracking what I have been eating and see the symptoms, but it's actually very, very difficult if you are not professional, because even with professionals, suggestions or advice will vary. Because for example, when I speak to my doctor, like one day I eat a certain type of food and then it might not be that day itself. It might actually not be the very next day. So even with food diary, you can't actually determine what exactly is the food source unless honestly you isolate all the way until just one to two types of food every day.
which is quite challenging, because what little I understand is, let's say today we have some symptoms and you have your food diary, right? So the last 3 days is what we need to review. Yeah. And the trigger could be in the food items that we had in the last 3 days. It could be the breakfast, it could be lunch or dinner. And then you're right that to identify what exactly triggered it, it's not the entire breakfast, but it could be one item in that breakfast that triggered it. Like could be eggs or you know, vinegar that was added to your salad or something else, yeah? Mm. So identifying that is a pretty challenging task. Wow.
Yes.
So you did try. And for how long did you keep trying and until you gave up?
I think I've tried to stick to it for about 1-2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really difficult. And initially, I even like tried to cook soup, to cook more soup with like collagen and all that is good for the tummy, good for the
wow.
gut.
Wow.
Yeah. But it is difficult to sustain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So after a while, I won't say give up, but you try to make it more sustainable. You balance out like some things that you are willing to try, some things that you know that it's more challenging, try to cut down.
Yes.
Yeah, even things like simple things like taking eggs. Mm-hmm. I used to love like soft boiled eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where you have like your typical
Same
Singaporean
with me.
Breakfast.
I love my soft boiled eggs.
Yeah.
For breakfast.
But now it is, I'm not sure if it triggers or it might actually affect. So what I do is I just stop and just eat hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
and that
unless,
works for you, yeah? Hard-boiled.
I think it's a better and safer way as of now, at the recovery stage at least, to be consuming protein this way, in this manner.
Yeah. Okay. Because what some people have shared is also that it could be the time of the day, yeah? The same food item in the morning isn't working for me, but if I have it in the afternoon or let's say at dinner time, it kind of works for my body. So we keep trying various combinations and, you know, it's like a hit and try, yeah? There isn't a one formula that works for everyone. What was your experience when it comes to, let's say, meats or fruits or vegetables in the broad categories, if we look at it?
Well, for me, I realized that there's actually a confusing message when I was researching and when I tried myself, things like salad.
Mm.
Some people say that consuming vegetable is good. Yeah, so actually it's a healthy diet to have like salads and all.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that salad being raw is actually slightly more difficult for your gut to digest because it requires different kind of enzymes to break down. So your stomach actually has to work harder to break down, like even for raw fruits.
Yeah, but
just got to be more selective in terms of maybe like bananas are fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the very peak of the flare, not to consume all sort of berries, which is supposed to be antioxidant and good and anti-inflammatory, but it might be too difficult to digest such things.
So
I think in terms of meat, I think it's fine, but don't try not to take too much because it's still harder to digest.
So how about fish? Were you able to take fish and
fish.
white meat, are they okay?
Fish is a good source.
And
with omega-3 anti-inflammatory properties, I think that helps.
Okay. So salmon and other types of fish you would add to your diet. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So now when we are talking about food and the various types of food and all that, I'm also thinking about your social life. How was that affected? You know, like if you needed a toilet so often or if you needed, you know, some kind of specific diet at certain times of the day. So how did it impact your social life?
I think at the initial stage, it really depends on when you are, which stage you are at in your condition at that point in time. So I think initial phase, my friends generally know that my tummy has always been weak. Yeah, so they were always quite accommodative and all. Mm. But when it comes to UC, it is different. When it comes to ulcerative practice, the difference is in terms of symptoms, the frequency is one thing, but the urgency is something that I think people cannot understand. Yeah, so that's
meaning when you need to go, you really need a toilet very quickly.
Like
yeah?
when
you
it's can't now,
hold. Yeah,
I
it's
I
like
mean
now.
Like, yeah. We need to find a way to the nearest toilet. We need to rush to the nearest toilet.
Yes, yes. So
and,
so I'm imagining
the toilet and that the cubicle is off filled. It's like
Yes. It's like before sitting down for a meal, you are looking around where is the sign for the toilet. Yeah. You would
constantly
make sure. You would make sure
it's the top of your mind all the time.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the strategies we all live
strategies,
with. And live closer, sit down closest to the door so that I reach quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, isn't it?
So that was my friend's thing. So those that are actually closer,
then
what they will do is that they will always choose locations that is the nearest to the toilet. They try as much as possible. But at the same time, like I said, it depends on which stage you are in, because at the worst of the flare, literally, I don't meet up with my friends for many months.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's like,
you don't and you don't dare to make any appointment because you know that every day you don't know what's going to happen next. And you don't want to jeopardize other people's schedule.
Yeah.
So you rather like, okay, when I'm better, then I will arrange a meeting or something. Yeah.
Wow. But as a young person, that would be quite impacting your life because you don't get to see your friends for, you said months. Was it like 4 months, 5 months? How long was that?
I think the longest was in 2019 and 2020, almost 1 year plus.
Wow. One whole year.
Was
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. That's pretty challenging. And wow. It's just that in your case, at least your friends had the prior experience, you know, when you had other issues. So they already tuned in to something's happening. But if it was someone else and then suddenly we are diagnosed with IBD, be it Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, it's a huge shift in mindset. And if the person is missing for one whole year, I don't know how many friends I might lose.
Yeah,
they might be like, oh, is she even interested? Or did something go wrong? Or maybe, that's it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, it's pretty challenging. And this was mainly because you needed to, you know, was it a lot of diarrhea episodes or?
Yes. So I think what happened was in 19 February, I think, I start to see symptoms of the frequency increasing again. And with that came the urgency as well. And it just keep increasing. So the entire 19, so prior to COVID, I was actually working from home already. Yeah, for
so
quite long
is,
actually.
That is 2018, 2019, we are still talking about.
Yeah,
that,
2019.
That couple of years ago, And you were working at home and can we get like an indication of the number of trips to the toilet in a day would be?
It was horrible. I think it was more than 20 times. And it's not even like there's no difference. There's no difference in day or night.
Wow.
It's literally just throughout the night, you'll still keep going,
24-7. It's like 24 hours a day. Yeah.
You are literally not getting any rest, actually. Yeah, it's very low quality rest that you get. Probably like every half an hour, 1 hour, you have to wake up and go to the toilet.
Yeah. Okay. And was there blood also?
On and off, yes.
On and off blood. Oh.
Yes.
So now that we are talking about blood too, maybe I could ask you, what kind of medication were you placed on?
With the first episode I had in 17, I had some steroids, mesalazine, and it actually came down. Yeah, so it was better. But when it comes to the 2019 February episode, it was terrible because I have tried different medication. I've tried azathioprine, methotrexate, steroids. They didn't work, so we actually move on to biologics. So I started with vedolizumab and then infliximab, and none of that actually works.
Wow.
Yeah, and each time it's like a half a year, half a year. So I think it's that's a very stressing or very depressing part.
Correct.
Where every time you are on a new medication or you're starting a new medication, you have hopes.
Hopes, exactly. Like
hopes that it can or it might work. And when and when you read online, you go on to read the medical journals and all, you talk about all the statistics. And then after that, I was like, I told the doctors, like, I really don't want to read all those anymore because it doesn't make sense to me because the numbers, they are not me.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm not in that percentage.
Yeah. You start doubting if I'm in that other category. Where the medicine doesn't work. Or some people even have very severe reactions to the medicines. Luckily, in your case, that didn't happen, which we are very thankful for. But then you did try a second biologic. And when that didn't work, was there a discussion about surgery?
I was pretty lucky that my doctor has always said that, surgery is always the last resort. So there are plenty of options, plenty in terms of, like, probably it's relative to other conditions, I don't know, but I don't see that there are plenty. But I understand from him that there are many pharmaceutical companies that are researching and coming out with new drugs all the time for all these conditions. So at least you're hopeful that every time you try medication, there's another half a year for something new to come out. I mean, it's a sad thing to hope for, but at least there are hopes.
So
after the second biologic, infliximab, that I tried and didn't really work, I was actually asked to try tofacitinib. So this is also a new drug from Pfizer, and I understand in Singapore that it is not very commonly taken. One thing is that it's new, the other thing is that it's very expensive, and it's because it's an oral medication and you don't get to do like a day surgery ward or something, you don't have the insurance claim for it. So plenty of people are not on it because of that. So,
Which might be the case when you compare it with biologics, that if it's an intravenous infusion kind of a situation, then people get admitted to the hospital and then the whole process is done. And then they get coverage from their insurance company.
Yes.
Yeah, but then this one, you are telling me that it's a tablet, right?
Yes, it's oral medication.
Yeah. So then naturally we would be given it to, we can take it at home and but the cost is pretty high and that can that can be challenging for many other patients who might not be able to afford it.
It is really expensive. I can't imagine if I actually consider myself very lucky to have it covered under insurance, because off my head, I think it's about close to $30 per tablet.
Wow.
And you're taking
one a day?
Two. The introduction phase, you will take about four a day.
Wow.
And then you cut to two a day. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That is pretty steep. Yes, absolutely. And this is besides the consultations and blood tests and scopes and all kinds of scans that will be happening, right? Yeah.
And also the muscleazine, the suppository. All those still have to take. Yeah.
Oh my! Yes. I almost forgot about them. Yeah. It is a lot of things. Wow. So it's not easy living with, of course, there's the issue of the illness itself impacting the body. There's fatigue, there's diarrhea, and the various challenges in the body. Then there's the emotional issues that we are facing, that half the people that we talk about don't understand the illness. And then comes the financial impact of the illness. So there's so many factors that you would be dealing with. And hats off to you. You are taking it in the right spirit, and you're keeping it all together.
But that's the only way to to go with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes we do talk about it in our support group that we have two options, right? We could be sitting and crying about it, and then we go down and the whole family goes down with us, or we choose to be sensible. Let's see what can be done and explore options, right? So it's really nice to see a young person like you, you know, making that wise choice that this is the way to go forward. yeah, fantastic. So what another thing that comes to my mind is sometimes people share that when they have numerous episodes of diarrhea, but it could also happen that they go through times when there's constipation. Was that the case with you?
Yeah. So for me, I actually didn't suspect so until a few episodes.
Oh, really?
So I think myself, most of the time it is, my UC is mostly diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a few episodes where there was a lot of bloating and I couldn't understand. So I spoke to my doctor and all. So he actually mentioned that there are times where you might be experiencing constipation not knowing that you're experiencing it, because a lot of times we always think of diarrhea and constipation as two ends of a spectrum.
Two different, absolutely.
Only one can happen at the same time.
Yeah.
but apparently it is not like this.
Oh, really?
Maybe not for people with conditions like us.
Yeah. It must be so confusing for you as well as to anybody else you might mention it. They might be like, are you sure that's happening? I mean, it really seems like bizarre, right? So how did you manage, you know, when such a thing happens? Because on the one hand, you have so many episodes of diarrhea, and then on the other hand, you have constipation. How did you manage?
I think you still have to, I don't know, for me personally, I still just take it as it is. The challenge is that you can't be taking medication. Because generally what happens is when people have diarrhea, they will take a diarrhea medication to stop the diarrhea.
Yes.
Which that will lead to constipation, which is why people understand it as a two different spectrum, two ends of the spectrum. But when you have diarrhea, you should be taking more fiber, but actually you can't take more fiber because that will cause diarrhea. So I think in terms of food wise, you really have to, I think the way I do it is I really reduce food intake and drink a lot of water. I think reducing food intake is really not a long-term practical approach, but I did see improvement in terms of symptoms every time I reduce food intake.
Okay.
Yeah. So wow. I think theoretically it's a good way for the gut to rest, but also at the same time, in a physical way, no input, no output kind of thing. Yeah.
True. So, when we are not eating anything, what's going to come out anyway? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
And no harm done if we skip maybe a meal or so, isn't it?
Yep.
It gives the gut some rest and
some
time for the body to try to recover. And yeah, so it does work for you. And
definitely not a long-term solution, but at least in the meantime,
And drinking a lot of water definitely helps you. Fantastic. So we do understand that it's almost like each body is different. That some, like when you were talking about the statistics, that the statistics show that this medicine works for X percentage of people, you know, out there in the world, but then for my body, it doesn't work. And similarly for food, you know, certain food items work for another person, but they don't work for you. So I need to tweak it exactly for what works for me. So it's almost like saying personalized care. For my body, X, Y, and Z items I can eat, and these are the medicines that I can take. So I come to the question that what kind of medicines are currently helping you?
I think it's something that I have always been asking my doctor as well, what he thinks that is actually working.
Oh, okay.
Because when we talk about inflammation, we also talk about the intensity and the locality of where along the GI is the infection.
Yes.
And sometimes we do take different, like there's enema, there's suppository, there's oral medication. Each will have its own perks or where it is actually trying to attend to. For me, I have been taking all those things except for tofacitinib. So I myself suspect, and actually the doctor too suspect, that this medication is actually working. Yeah. So back to what you mentioned about the insurance things just now. I mean, to me, it is very unfortunate that we have to choose medication based on not the efficacy that is treating us, but based on the financial condition that we are in to get that kind of treatment. And we are not talking about we are in a developing country or third world country. And it is still hitting us, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are various schemes out there where the government subsidies come in and some charities also step in to help, including our charity doing a little bit of our part. But then, yes, the costs are pretty steep. And only when some of us have insurance, and that too, if it was before we got diagnosed, we had insurance, that would be a fantastic thing. But not everyone has that.
Yes.
Again, there are many pros and cons to the treatment options also. But we make do with what best we can and explore what works for us, and we go forward. So I come to the next point that there are about 2,000 people in Singapore who are living with either Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. And I'm wondering if there's something you would like to request or appeal to our listeners, yeah, that maybe they can be a little bit more understanding about this disease, or is there something you would like to request?
I have actually been thinking about this. How can others actually help us to feel better or be better? I think the least or the maximum that the best that they can do is really being understanding. Yeah, because the cause to begin with, when we talk about the cause of the disease itself, it's still not determined whether, you know, there's a direct cause, but generally they always goes down to environment, food, stress induced, and I think inherited or something here.
Yeah, the genetic factors.
Yeah. So and it comes very suddenly. Like for me myself, I've always been active doing different kind of sports since I was young. And then suddenly when this thing hit, I was really lying on the bed for, it's like 24/7 for a few months.
Wow.
And it's so tiring even when you are awake. Because the pain is actually draining you all the time. You are actually expending a lot of energy even when you are staying awake, battering the pain. I think this is what people don't understand. And probably this is a good thing that if even as friends or family members to understand it, because I have the experience of my friends saying that, oh, since you are at home, since now you are like out of job because of my condition, why don't you just do some like self-improvement, self-study and all? I'm like, I am trying actually. But what people don't understand is that you are really trying to rest, and you are, whenever you're awake, you are always very tired because of the pain.
Yes.
And it's very difficult to focus.
Yes. And that part I totally relate to. And I think all of us who are living with the illness have this experience. And in fact, I was forced to think further, and I came up with three types of fatigue. I enhanced my vocabulary so that people can understand what we mean by when we say we are tired, we are fatigued. You know, then now I describe it as there are three types of fatigue. One, when you go physically exerting yourself, it could be running a marathon, going on a long hike, those kind of physically taxing work. And then the body can rest and recover. The second could be when you're mentally challenged meaning when you are preparing for an exam or you're going for interviews, you're stressed out about something. So that's the mental type of fatigue. But then you take a few days off, you take a short vacation, or you just rest at home and relax, you recover, you're fine. The third type is the hour kind of fatigue, which no matter how much you rest, no matter how much you try to relax, it never goes away. That's the type of fatigue we are talking about. And I hope people can try to understand that when we say we are tired, we are fatigued, this resting will not help us. It helps to some extent. But then again, for each one of us to realize that, okay, a little bit of exercise, a little bit of really mentally letting go of all the stress also helps. And then please try to understand that we are ill and it's not our choice that we want to lie down and, you know, not do anything or just be at home. It's pretty challenging. Yeah, go ahead.
So I think if you talk about, like, if there's one thing that I would like to share with the public out there, family and friends of patients, would be imagine yourself having diarrhea throughout the whole day, every single day. It's like how we are home suffering. If it's like how they are suffering from being home from COVID now, but we are doing it despite whether there's COVID or not.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that's that helps impact. Them to relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And understand better.
Absolutely. Mm. I think in these current times, people might be able to understand IBD patients better.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like you shared, you were at home one whole year because of the illness and you just couldn't step out. And in that situation, even immediate family members didn't understand what you're going through. Mm. Yeah. But then this pandemic comes along and kind of helps us in a way. Yeah. That people will be able to understand a little bit more what we go through. That we are bound by the illness, we have to be at home. We can't leave. We can't step out. You know, what if we have an accident? You know, accident in the sense it's the diarrhea we are talking about. Yeah. It's embarrassing that we're trying to rush to the toilet and we're not able to reach it on time. Yeah. Those kind of things, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So hopefully people will understand. And yeah, thanks for sharing your journey. And any last message you would like to share with everyone, just go ahead. maybe even for a person who might have just been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, is there a message for a newly diagnosed patient?
Honestly speaking, there's never a good time to be sick. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate for, I understand that there are actually a lot of very young members that are actually diagnosed when they are very, very young. To me, that's even way worse than what I'm going through. I mean, I went through my childhood carefree and very fun one, I think. Yeah, so at least I've been through all those. And so there's no best time to be diagnosed with a condition or so, but there's always a way out. There's always a way out. So really never give up. Yeah, because giving up is really the first step to ending everything. So if you have a condition and you are still trying to work towards your goals and things in life, there will always be a chance. Mm-hmm. Even without a condition, if you don't have all those... You won't be much of a living anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I suppose by taking that first step of taking medication, getting help, even though it might mean taking a few months off the regular plan that the person had, you know, the patient who's just diagnosed might be in the hospital listening to us or might be at home trying to recover from the recent flare-up of symptoms. But then with the medication and the right care and the diet, you know, some changes have to be made and it takes a little time. Give your body some time and things will work out And then life can be picked up from there going forward. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Alex, for sharing so many details and insights about your experiences and giving hope to all our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nidhi. Thank you very much.
We hope you found today's conversation useful, and we look forward to you joining us in the next episode. For more information about joining the patient support group, please contact the Crohn's and Colitis Society of Singapore. You can reach us via email at admin@ibd.org.sg or WhatsApp at +65 9756 4066. Do visit our website www.ibd.org.sg to know more about our annual seminar, financial assistance schemes, and how you could join us as a member, meet other patients, as well as parents of children living with IBD.